What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Periodic Table. This is the weekly science news show over here at youtube.com/Brandon Hanna. Please like, comment, and subscribe. Anyway, this is the science show. We break down the top three, what I decide are the top three science news stories of the week, and we just kind of go over them. We learn something new. We're not experts, but hey, this is one big virtual classroom, and we are all here to learn together. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. I am a mechanical engineer. You might know me as a host over at AfterBuzz TV or the Popcorn Talk Network or, of course, the movie Trivia Schmodown. But today I am joined by two amazing guests. Starting off to my immediate left, you're right, it is Dwayne Burke. He is a streamer and creator of Burke Made, engineer slash camera operator for SEN and Gucciverse, an all-around great guy and scientific mind. Welcome.
I don't know about scientific mind, but the rest of it is totally accurate.
Come on, we got to embellish a little bit so that people trust the stuff that we say. No, not at all. Like I said, guys, we're here to learn with you. And someone who is here to learn with us for the first time ever, you might also know him from the movie Trivia Schmodown. It is James White.
What's up, guys? Yeah, no, to quote the immortal Adam Savage, you know, the only difference between science and screwing around is writing it down. So got my notes here ready to talk about some science with you.
I love that. We're off to a great start with James's first show ever. And we do have a great show for you all today. We are talking about scientists, of course, but what have they done? Well, they've taught spinach how to send emails, apparently, and it could warn us about the dangers of climate change. And on a little bit more optimistic note, we have a new chameleon species discovered, maybe the world's tiniest reptile, but can they play the world's smallest violin? We're going to find all that out. And yes, we have a special segment for you all, guys. We are bringing it back. Let's get social. What is going on with this viral video of Mars that has been circulating around Twitter this past week? We're going to talk about it. But before we do, let's jump all the way back up to the top. Let us talk about scientists. Well, they've taught spinach how to send emails, and it could warn us about climate change. It may sound like something out of a futuristic science fiction film, but scientists have managed to engineer spinach plants, which are capable of sending emails. Through nanotechnology, engineers at MIT in the US have transformed spinach into sensors capable of detecting explosive materials. These plants are then able to wirelessly relay that information back to the scientist. When the spinach roots detect the presence of nitro aromatics, I think I got that right, in groundwater, a compound often found in explosives like landmines, the carbon nanotubes within the plants leaves emit a signal. And this signal is then read by an infrared camera, sending an email alert to scientists. So this isn't the first time on this show where we've had plants, organic material acting in ways like we know computers to act, but the future is just getting weirder and weirder. James, it's your first time on this show, so let's start off with you right out of the gate. What do you think about spinach sending emails to warn scientists about dangers?
Dude, this is really fascinating. Like, I'm blown away. When I saw this this article a couple days ago, I didn't get a chance to read it at the time, but my brain was just already turning. It's like, how is this possible? What's going on? So loved reading the article. And the real world implications are just fascinating to me. Like, that we can teach spinach, or I mean, guess not really teach it, because it's what it's biologically designed to do, but to be able to take plant life and have it detect things in the groundwater and detect things in the soil that will help humanity. It just blows my mind that we're at that level of technology right now. And I am just so curious about what we can take this information and use it for. Is it something that we're going to be able to use for, you know, the military? Is it going to be something that's going to be a little bit more for climate change? And I love what they were saying in the article about that. With climate change, is being able to have the plant life that knows when, like, a drought's coming along before, you know, scientists know that a drought's coming. Being able to relay that information earlier, get ahead of things. And it's just, it blows my mind of what the possibilities could be.
Yeah, definitely. There seems to be a lot of possibilities. And this story, guys, is coming to us from Euronews.com. Links to all of the articles discussed on this show are always in the description down below if you want to read more and learn a little bit more for yourself. And like I said, I have noticed a trend lately on this show about plants working almost like computers. And this article does point out that this experiment is part of a wider field of research involving engineering electronic components and systems into plants. So I'm not crazy. This even has a name. It's called plant nanobiotics. And I think this is utterly fascinating. So Dwayne, let's throw it over to you next. Are you just as fascinated as I am about plant nanobiotics? And do you agree with James about the potential implications of this nanobiotic technology?
I mean, first things first, it's like these people have never seen a science fiction movie. And like, come on, stop messing with nature, man. Like, stop it. But I think that this is a really cool development. My first thought is like, oh, they're going to commercialize this and they're going to use it to I think the industry that could use it the most is like the marijuana industry. Like, hey, these plants are now going to tell you when they're full grown, you don't really need to tend them, especially if you're doing like what a lot of people do when they grow marijuana. They do it hydroponically. So like there, it doesn't take a lot of attention. You kind of just need to show up when it's full grown and harvest it. And it's like, these are things that like it's farmers could use it, you know, this type of technology and cut manpower. 'Cause like one of the biggest things with farms currently is they're struggling to pay people because they're struggling, and this is one place where they could, you know, maybe cut costs a little bit, and that'll help with food production across the planet, and that'll help with hunger, and like it's there's so many different avenues and ways that this could help, along with the things that were brought up in the article, like climate change and pollution. And they're already detecting things in the groundwater, but what if we get to the point where it can detect things that are in the air? And okay, this area is heavily polluted. We've got to, you know, focus our attention on changing things in this particular area, you know, like, that would be a step in the right direction. But it's still, my initial thoughts were, man, we're going to get like poison ivy in real life. And like the plants are going to come for us. It's not going to be the apes. It's going to be the plants.
It'll be both.
yeah, it'll be both. Don't
let the apes eat the spinach, man.
No, I love that. I love how you, Dwayne, you always bring a different perspective on the show where there's, like you said, there's so many different potential for this technology in this article. But outside of the box, you know, there are potentially ways where this could help solve farming issues, hunger crises, important topics like that as well. And you do bring up a good point about, have these people ever read a science fiction novel or watched a science fiction film? They say in this article, there's a quote that says, this is a novel demonstration of how we have overcome the plant human communication barrier. And I was like, well, I mean, if you had figured that out, maybe The Happening wouldn't have happened, or maybe this is what would cause The Happening to happen. I don't know.
I'm just terrified for Audrey 2 to pop up.
Oh my gosh. I did not even think about that movie.
Yeah,
I just had a thought. Is now that we can communicate with plants, what are the vegans gonna do? Like, they've got nothing to eat.
Well, I don't know. This is not necessarily plants communicating. You know, as we said in the article, it's more just a natural organic process that happens that we can now trigger using a combination of like infrared cameras, stuff like that. What I find interesting in this article is that the original purpose of this experiment was to detect explosives. But then later on, they realized that they could use this technology to warn researchers about pollution and climate change. And the reason being, that sounds better, is that that they can use nanoparticles to turn the plants into sensors for pollutants by altering how the plants actually photosynthesize. So this is them actually altering the plants. And they're able to, in that way, have them detect nitric oxide, which is a pollutant caused by combustion, which obviously combustion creates also carbon dioxide, which we obviously know as the main greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. So there is a lot to be uncovered here underneath the soil, if you will. But I am just blanking out today, guys. We do have people in the live chat here. BCD Haskell 420. Welcome. Gertie the Dino is here for the first time ever in the live chat. Thank you so much for being here, guys. Did I mention Jake Iacovetta? I don't know if I did. Sometimes me and Jake have beef, but Jake Iacovetta is here as well. Thank you guys so much for joining us in the live chat. What are some of your thoughts on spinach sending emails to humans? I want to know. And as always, guys, please like this video, hit that subscribe button if you enjoy all this great science-related content coming to you every weekend. Hit that little notification bell so you don't miss a thing, and leave a comment down below. And again, let us know your thoughts if you're unable to catch the show live. James, I just want to go back to you. Any closing thoughts on spinach sending emails before we move on to our next topic?
Yeah, I'm very curious about how the detection of explosives in the ground is really going to become practical. It's like, how big of a field of spinach do you really need to be able to find a landmine? Now, once you know there's a landmine there, how are you going to find the landmine? I mean, you're still going to need anti-landmine things. So I don't understand the practicality of it, or at least how they're going to materialize it into a practical way. I don't see the end game there, but I'm very curious about what it could be. What sorts of things that could come up with that technology? What are you going to say, Dwayne?
I mean, I could see the practicality, not necessarily here in the United States, but in some of the countries that are a little bit more war torn. Mm-hmm. Vietnam still has a problem to this day with finding landmines from the Vietnam War. Korea has a problem with landmines from the Korean War. I'm sure there's other countries in the Middle East, or, you know, Eastern Bloc Europe. Like, there's tons of places where something like that could be practical, where it's like, you know, instead of searching all over, hey, maybe it's not spinach, but now that they've proven it with spinach, they can change it to a crop that is useful in that region.
Yeah.
And then they're planting crops that are useful, and then those crops can also help them find, at least, you know, take the needle to a haystack, to a needle, to a hand, you know, you're looking for a needle in a handful of hay.
Right.
You know, and then from there, yeah, you still need the deactivation equipment and experience and all that stuff. But at least now, instead of looking in an entire forest, you're looking in a small field.
You know? Yeah, that's a good point. No, it's the proliferation of landmines is still terrible in the world. So yeah, any way they can find a way to locate it. Just curious about the application.
Yeah. It's definitely not some like a quick fix. Like, it's not going to help. I don't think there's a military application. I don't know if like the military is like strolling down roads in Iraq, like throwing spinach seeds on the ground. Like, hey, in like, you know, 6 months, we'll find out if there's landmines here.
And one of the things we didn't touch on was using it for battery powder. They were talking about grinding down the spinach and turning it into sheets and doing a battery out of it to replace lithium ion batteries, which, any way you can find a battery that can replace a lithium ion, which is not good environmentally, If we can find a way to replace that with equal power that is organic or at least much more biodegradable than a lithium ion battery, that's a big plus.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to point out. Obviously, like you said, lithium ion batteries, the manufacturing of which not super great for the environment. Great batteries though, but so it's like, you know, it's definitely a process moving from fossil fuels, coal combustion technology towards energy like wind and solar, which sometimes requires storing power in a battery when there are more larger influxes of energy generation for the times where maybe energy generation is a little slower. So I think that's a good point. If we can somehow also tie this technology in, and that's just absolutely incredible, the versatility that they're thinking of which they could utilize spinach of all things is truly incredible. Dwayne, what about you? Do you have any other closing thoughts on this article?
No, I'm interested to see where it goes in the future and how many other different plants they decide to do this with.
what else can they do? What other plants are going to be turned into living computers? We're just going to have to wait and find out. But let's move on to something else, something that I thought was just a fun headline, a fun article, and that is, guys, we have a new chameleon species, maybe the world's tiniest reptile, hidden beneath the leaf litter of a northern, Malagasy. I hope I got that right. Malagasy forest lives a chameleon so slight that it could tumble off the tip of your finger, measuring just under 30 millimeters from snout to tail. The newly described species may be the smallest reptile on Earth. And here's something that I think is just wild. There are just two adult specimens, a male and a female, that are known at all. The female measures 28.9 millimeters, considerably larger than the 21.6 millimeter long male. The size difference may have driven the male's genitalia to be quite large. Wow, nearly 20% of its body length to be better fit for his mate. Herpetologist Frank Glaw at the Bavarian State Collection of Zoology in Munich and colleagues suggest all this new theories to this new species. So, Dwayne, let's go over to you. What do you think of this new super tiny chameleon? And also, do you have any thoughts on its genitalia being 20% of its total body length?
I mean, That's some impressive junk, I guess. but I mean, how does he walk around with all that?
Like, very carefully.
Very carefully. And there's only one. There's only one left. There's a male and a female. That's it. So you know what? He's got to come packing, right?
I mean, it's interesting that they've only found two adult. Yeah. Of this species, I mean, I far from believe that there are only two adults, because I mean, we know how much of the world is still unexplored, and they probably just haven't found them, or they may have like migration patterns or things that if this is a relatively new species, there's tons that we don't know about them, so they just may not have found these two may even been ones that were outliers and outside of their normal like habitat, and we just happen to find them. But it is interesting that we're still finding new things.
Yeah, certainly. James, let's go over to you next. Are you intrigued that still in 2021 we are still finding new species of anything, let alone super tiny chameleons in the forest that pack quite large genitalia?
Yeah, I mean, Ant-Man 3 is going to be wild. You know, I can't wait to see Scott Lang riding on a little miniature chameleon. Dude, that's going to be the best. Somebody get Peyton Reed on the phone immediately. Yeah, it's really interesting that they're still finding new species. You know, it's amazing how much of the world is charted and mapped, and how much we have still yet to learn. You know, there's so much of this planet that just goes uncovered. But I also ask the question, how do they know this is a new species? How do they know this isn't just two miniature chameleons from, like, there may be two little baby chameleons. How do they know they're adults? I want to know how this is figured out. They could be little baby chameleons. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it does say here in the article that they are aware of some sort of relation to other known chameleons. So they actually dubbed the species B. nana for its nano size, and it belongs to a genus of at least 13 other small chameleons spread out across mountainous forest of northern Madagascar. And it says here, why B. nana and its cousins shrank to such minuscule proportions remains a mystery. Though smallness does have its benefits, guys. If you didn't think that the large genitalia was enough, there is some evidence that these small chameleons are especially good shots with their ballistic tongues. I wish I was making this up, but it's all here in the article.
It's a really good joke in there that I'm just going to let go.
There are some really good jokes in here, but we're going to try to keep this PG-13. So guys, so there is some sort of, they are aware that this belongs to a genus of 13 other small chameleon species, if you will. So, but why it's so small is still unknown. Do we think that, I mean, let's just like speculate, hypothesize ourselves. Do we think that there's an evolutionary reason why these chameleons are so small? Is it just like a random, super random outlier mutation, like you said, like there's only two of them and then like that's it? Or I don't know, there's a lot of questions. I want to know, does the live chat have any comments or speculation as well? William Belford just saying Madagascar always has crazy stuff, and that, yes, for all of you out there who do not know your metric to English conversions, 30 millimeters is just over an inch. Thank you for that, Belford. And yeah, so not nothing too much going on in the live chat, and I am just all fogged up today, guys, so please excuse me if I'm stumbling over my words. But yeah, this is a not too much to talk about with this article. I just thought it would be something fun, and if nobody else has any more inappropriate jokes or puns or speculation left, we can move on right into our special segment for this week.
Well, I do have a curious, or at least a something that makes my mind curious, is how they did get that small. I don't know the landscape and the animals that are in that particular area of the forest. So I'm wondering, was it evolutionary to where they didn't have predators that were smaller? Whereas maybe they have larger snakes and things like that that would prey on larger chameleons, but there's not a vast series of animals that's going to prey on something that tiny. So maybe they just kept getting smaller and smaller that way. I really would love to see what the Malagasy, is that what you said, forest or whatever it was, where they find. I'd like to look at what types of animals are in there and see if there is an evolutionary pattern to see why they would be becoming smaller.
Yeah, I mean, it says here that they are going to become a critically endangered species, and they are in a protected area by the Malagasy government because of deforestation and habitat degradation. At first glance, it doesn't seem like there's any evolutionary benefits to being that small since they are so endangered. Yeah. But Dwayne, before we move on, do you have any more thoughts on this?
No, I mean, I had a similar thought to James. I was like, maybe they got that small because, you know, they're not filling and no one wants to eat them if they're that small.
that's a good point. We're just going to have to wait and find out, and hopefully science might have some better answers for us. But let's move on to our special segment for the week, and we are bringing back Let's Get Social. There has been a viral video circulating around Twitter. I've had a few friends send it to me throughout the week, and this is the surface of Mars seen by the Curiosity rover edited together with the sound of Martian winds captured by the InSight lander. And I do have for you guys here, I do have the video pulled up. So let's take a watch and listen, and then we can talk about it a little more afterwards. So let's do this thing. And can we hear this, guys? Did I click the right buttons?
I cannot hear it.
I did not click the right button.
I can't hear either.
Pardon me. let me figure this one out for a second, guys. Oh, Dwayne, fill some dead air. Go.
Be funny.
Yeah, be funny, clown. Be funny. I believe you're supposed to click the share sound button when you.
I was supposed to do that. Yes, that's on me. That's on me. All right, we're back. Oh, let's start at the beginning. Do you hear it now?
Yes. Yeah. Now it just sounds like you're messing up with your mic.
Well, that's what the video actually sounds like.
Stop breathing into your microphone.
This is Martian winds, guys. So this is really cool, actually. This is, I think this image is a panoramic image captured by the Curiosity rover. And basically what it does, as I said, it's panoramic. It just takes a bunch of different photos and composites them all together. So we get like this super high definition image of the surface of Mars here. And looks like someone took that picture, decided to kind of pan over it almost to give us the effect like we're looking at a video feed, and to incorporate this sound that was actually captured from Mars from the InSight lander and put it all together to kind of give us all this feeling of what it would actually be like to be standing on Mars alongside the Curiosity rover. And so I think it's really cool because it's something that has kind of captured the imagination of a lot of people who may not be super aware of the type of research, type of data that we have been collecting from Mars over the last couple of decades through various rovers and landers and things like that. And I think it's cool. It's been a great thing to get people talking because the sound and the footage, the picture that you're seeing there are not super new. They've been around for a long time, but for someone to take it, and I wish I knew exactly, I tried to do some research to find exactly where this comes from. I wish I knew who decided to kind of have this idea and take this data and put it together, because it really does, it adds like another dimension to it, where a lot of people, they could just be scrolling on Twitter and see a picture of Mars and be like, oh, that's cool, but keep scrolling. But to incorporate that kind of visual aid of like that panning effect and the sound, it kind of just adds a little something to it. So Dwayne, let's go over to you. What did you think when you stumbled across this little footage of Mars?
My initial thought was, I've been here before. It's very similar to like the desert in the Middle East. It almost looks identical, to be completely honest. But it does sound a little bit different, and I think, you know, I was like, oh, I wonder why the wind sounds so different. Is it whatever microphone they had on the rover? Is it a difference in the atmosphere? Is, you know, just think, I was, because I listened to it on loop for probably about two minutes on accident. I started watching the video, clicked onto something else, and then didn't realize that it was gonna keep playing on a loop. And it had this like haunting grating like effect, and I was like, okay, I need to go stop this because this is starting to affect me mentally. But it's that was more interesting to me, is like, why does the wind sound different than the environment?
Yeah, I think And I'm just pulling up an article now from NASA.gov. This was from 2019. And they do say that the spacecraft's exquisitely sensitive seismometer called the Seismic Experiment for Interior Structure can pick up vibrations as subtle as breeze. So it's not quite a microphone in the way that, like, I'm talking into this microphone here. It's kind of more so picking up like the vibrations that are put on the lander itself, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a way of interpreting that data, that sound from Mars, but not quite in like the way that we normally experience our ears picking up vibrations, is kind of how I'm seeing it now. And I can also throw this this article in the description down below, guys, if you want to learn more for yourself. James, let's throw it over to you. What was your initial impression upon looking at this footage?
Well, my initial impression was, as I was watching it, I was just waiting as it kept panning to see Bernie Sanders sitting in a chair with mittens. I figured that was going to be the end of this video. But no, it was such a cool thing. Where I grew up in Florida was literally within viewing of the vehicle assembly building of the Kennedy Space Center. So growing up, seeing the space shuttle launch and everything right there, I have a deep affinity for NASA and for the space program. So I would love to see us keep exploring the solar system as much as possible. So any information any new information or any new videos or pictures that we get from Mars and these other planets just is always special. And as you pointed out, to be able to sync up, audio onto it, it just sends it into another level. I've seen plenty of different rover pictures from Mars, but when you add that bit of wind, it really puts it into more of a perspective of what you're looking at. And it gives you a little bit more of a feel for the area versus just looking at, pictures. It's going to give you a different feeling when you're hearing it, that feeling of almost being there in that isolation. It's just like he said, it looks just like a desert. I mean, that's kind of like that planet is. So it's vast and empty, and you hear every little tiny bit of the breeze. It's a creepy image, but it's really interesting. And I can't wait to see what we can keep exploring in the solar system.
Yeah, I think it's really, really cool. And like I said, like it sparked the imagination, just like it kind of like sparks your imagination, even if it does lead you to think you're waiting to see Bernie Sanders wearing a pair of mittens on the other side of the camera. But it is really cool. And I'm looking at this article now more. And it says that this seismometer was designed to pick up quakes actually on the surface of Mars.
Wow.
But it has a super sensitive ear, and they can kind of use it to also listen for wind and a lot of other various vibrations and noises. And scientists actually had to take the time to listen to the data and kind of filter out stuff and listen and say, oh, this sound is wind, so let's filter out everything else but the wind. And so I think that's really cool. It is kind of almost like a bit of an art form for these scientists to kind of interpret some of this data and listen and have an ear for what they're perceiving, which I think it's really cool. And it sounds like a fun job. I would sign up for it.
Okay.
For sure. And we have Gertie the Dino asking, could it pick up the vibrations of a tiny chameleon eating spinach? That I don't know. But I don't know why I don't know why the chameleon would want to eat our new supercomputer / bomb detector. That's because not
then
cool.
Then the chameleon becomes just all powerful, and that little tiny chameleon can start sending emails with his brain. I mean, he's going to send emails to Mars. It's all coming full circle.
You were right. Ant-Man 3 is going to be wild.
This is so good. I can't wait.
Dwayne, I'm going to throw it back to you. Any closing thoughts on this footage from Mars, tiny chameleons, or spinach sending emails? Any last remarks or thoughts that maybe you didn't have the chance to get out there in our conversation?
Not necessarily on those, but I think that these three topics are perfect proof of how diverse science can be and how fun science can be. It doesn't always have to be, you know, quantum physics and things that are so big brain that you're never going to understand them without, you know, tons of degrees and lots of math. Mm-hmm. It can just be fun little things that we've done to help improve and change the world. So have fun with science. Don't be scared of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And that's exactly what I try to do with this show, specifically what I was trying to do with this show today, picking out the topics, is I want to talk about stuff that's fun and cool and interesting. And, you know, I'm looking, there's a lot of negative news out there when you Google science news, especially lately, with various government administrations and a certain virus that is currently happening and what that could do to the scientific community, how we interpret data, how we publish scientific articles. There's a lot of negativity out there that I thought about maybe we should cover, but I was like, you know what? This is a time for a little bit of optimism, a little bit of fun. Tiny chameleons, not something we can get into too much discussion about, but I figured it was something neat. And also talking about footage from Mars circulating around the internet, inspiring inspiration of people who might see this footage and think to themselves, wow, like I want to work for NASA one day. I want to become an engineer. Hell, that's how I got involved in all this stuff. I was watching Apollo space program documentaries on the Science Channel and the History Channel. And I said, I want to be a mechanical engineer. And now look at me, handsome as ever. James, what about you? Any closing remarks about the stuff that we talked about here today?
No, I think I've said everything. But yeah, just to echo what Dwayne and you were just saying, it's nice that this show exists to help just get people more curious about science. You know, science is all sorts of things. It's not just a bunch of math equations, and it's not a bunch of people just looking at data. It can be all sorts of different things. Keep your brain curious. Look into things that interest you, and just always look to build up different knowledge bases. I think it's something that I always strive to do, is try to look into things that make me think or make me curious. And I think it's always helpful.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for like saying that. Thank you for being on this show. Thank you to both of you for being on the show. Once again, I feel like I was a little foggy today, stumbled over my words, but it was, I'm doing it again right now. I'm all messed up today, guys. No, I just want to say, like, full disclosure, I have been a little sick the last couple of days, so I'm not at 100%, but I thank you for bearing with me anyway. Dwayne, let's go over to you. If Spinach wants to send you an email, where can they find you online?
I'm not going to give out my email address, but rats. You can find me anywhere and everywhere on the internet at Burke Made. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Stereo, patreon.com/BurkeMade. You can find me on YouTube every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for my show Technical Difficulties, where I help you with all your, that's not my email, Brandy, where I help you with all your technical difficulties when it comes to streaming and broadcasting. You can find me Friday, 11 a.m. Pacific time for Dessert Men Live with my co-host Aiden Kosick. And this week we had a very special guest, one Sabrina Ramirez, and we talked about the Golden Globe and SAG award nominations and the problems with those. And then you can also find me on Twitch every Monday, Tuesday, and Saturday. On my Twitch channel, I have a schedule, so you'll know exactly when I go live. And yeah, I think that's about everywhere.
Awesome. And James, right after you're done following Dwayne at all of his endeavors, and also you're trying to also dodge emails from Spinach and tiny reptiles and Martian landers, where can the people find you online?
Yeah, you can find me online at Twitter and Letterboxd, and occasionally on Instagram at Gator24, G4TOR24. You can find me pop up occasionally over on the PJ Campbell Network doing watch-alongs and Suddenly Soundtracks and all of the fun shows over with those wonderful people. And you can find me coming up here in Season 8 of the Movie Tribute Schmodown. New season starts off here in a couple weeks. It's going to be a big one.
Awesome. Great. And you can also find me at some point in the Movie Trivia Schmodown. Who knows when? I won't say. But you can find me in the meantime at Twitter and Instagram, or on Twitter and Instagram, at BrandonHanna07, making a fool out of myself right here at YouTube.com/BrandonHanna, where we bring you the periodic table every week. I also do a show now called Brandon Hanna Live, which I bring to you monthly, where I talk to you guys about things going on in the world of TV, film, pop culture, news in general, you name it. This past month, I had PJ Campbell on and Raul Mendoza to talk about everything going on with HBO Max, Godzilla versus Kong, Snyder Cut, all that glorious stuff. And I'm also still, I feel bad plugging this, but I'm going to keep plugging it, guys. I'm still working on the Film Physics Christmas special. Yes, it is still a thing that is happening. Christmas is year round, guys. It never ends. And this will be coming to you actually in the month of February. I will definitively state this is coming to you guys in the month of February, and you're not going to want to miss it. I've put a lot of time and effort. Clearly, I'm not just blowing it off. I'm putting a lot of time and effort into this video for you guys. And Film Physics will be coming to you on this channel on a bi-monthly basis, with maybe some guests. So you might want to keep an eye out for that. So thank you guys all for joining us here today. Thank you once again to James and Dwayne for being on the show. James, it was your first time on the show. It was so great to have you here. You do also have a very scientific mind, if you know it or not. And Dwayne, as always, it was awesome to have you on the show as well. I love what you bring to the periodic table. And as always, guys, thank you for taking time out of your day